Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today on the podcast, I wanted to talk about Candida, which is a type of yeast or fungus that can live naturally in various parts of the body, such as the mouth, the gut, the skin, the vagina, and it potentially doesn't cause any harm in the body. However, when this yeast or fungus is able to overgrow due to a disrupted microbiome, it can then become a problem and it can potentially be a contributing factor to chronic fatigue. So recently, if you've been listening to the podcast, you probably listened to the series I did on mold and mycotoxin illness and all the different factors that we want to consider if mold is a potential issue for you and your chronic fatigue journey. Now, recently I was looking for some topic ideas for the podcast on Instagram and somebody said, oh, could you do a podcast on Candida? And I thought about it because rightfully so, it's not a topic that I've covered so far. And there is a lot of overlap between Candida and mold because often the two can go hand in hand. However, it did make sense to cover Candida in its own right, on its own, in a separate episode. And that's what this episode is today. So we'll be talking a little bit about what Candida is, how it can impact the body and be a driving force in chronic fatigue, how you can test for it, and then what you can do to go about addressing it as one of the factors, because there probably are many different factors in your fatigue recovery journey. So before we dive into the full episode, this is my little plea to please leave a review. All you need to do is go into your app, if it's Spotify, for example, and just leave a 5-star rating. You don't even have to write anything down. Just give me 5 stars and it would mean so much to me because it improves the podcast rankings. It also means that other people are able to find this information more easily and it can really, really help them. If you are an iTunes listener, there must be a way for you to leave a review. I don't use iTunes. I'm not an Apple person, so I can't tell you exactly how, but usually these things are pretty obvious and you can probably just pop into your app or whatever you're listening on and leave a review. And I would be so grateful. And if you would like to take your appreciation one step further, you can always share this episode with a particular person or 5 people who you think it may benefit, or maybe share it in a chronic fatigue community that you're part of, so more people can find the podcast, find the episodes, and get the help that they need. But on that note, let's dive into the episode. So I've already kind of introduced what Candida is, and the most common type of Candida infection is Candida albicans. However, there can be other types of Candida species and other types of yeast and fungal species, which can also be problematic in the body. So I'm just going to be using the word Candida as like a general reference to yeast and fungal overgrowth for the purpose of this episode. And generally speaking, we can find that it can overgrow in the mouth and it can be a cause of oral thrush, which can often be identified as white patches on the tongue and in the mouth. It can also overgrow in the vagina and it can be a common cause of yeast infections, which are characterized by itchy and irritated areas around the vagina. It can also cause skin infections, so red, itchy rashes, especially in warm, moist areas like the armpits and between folds of skin. And it can also cause invasive candidiasis. That's a hard one to pronounce. But basically, because Candida can reside in the gut, sometimes if somebody has a leaky gut, for example, it can enter into the bloodstream and then it becomes systemic. And then it can impact organs, and this can occur if the immune system is weakened, but can also be a factor which is weakening for the immune system, and it can cause various problems in the body. So usually we would address Candida infections with antifungal treatments. There are medications you can take, but in my line of work, you would use nutraceuticals, so herbal supplements. And we really want to work on prevention, which might be having a healthy diet, which I'll talk a little bit more about today, good hygiene, and managing any underlying health conditions. And one of those underlying health conditions that we really want to consider is how we support the immune system, because a healthy immune system should be able to keep some of these overgrowths in check. And if that's not happening, we might want to dig a little bit deeper and work out what's been going on. But one of the things I'd like to talk about first before we go into how to address candida is the link between candida and chronic fatigue. So candida overgrowth can contribute to chronic fatigue through a combination of immune system suppression, toxin production, gut dysfunction, and inflammation. And when candida proliferates beyond its normal levels, it can lead to various symptoms that resemble chronic fatigue symptoms and contribute to ongoing fatigue in general. Whether you have a chronic fatigue diagnosis or not, it can just be a contributing factor in fatigue for anyone who is experiencing some sort of energy limiting illness. So going into these different aspects in more detail, the first one being toxin production and toxic load. So just like mold, candida can produce mycotoxins, which are toxic substances, and these can enter the bloodstream and spread throughout the body. And these toxins can have several harmful effects on the brain and nervous system, but really they can create system-wide problems. And chronic toxin exposure can also overwhelm the body's ability to detoxify, and this can cause fatigue in the long term as individual struggles to eliminate toxins. But that can also contribute to other factors, for example, hormone imbalances, because we have to detoxify our own hormones, or skin issues because toxins are spilling over into the skin. And so just the detoxification processes alone are not the only issue, but it's the imbalances which are coming from hindered or overloaded detoxification. Another way in which candida impacts chronic fatigue is through the immune system and inflammation. So candida overgrowth activates a chronic immune response, especially if it becomes systemic, leading to inflammation in the body. And then low-grade inflammation in the body is a major contributing factor in fatigue, because energy is prioritized towards the immune system to resolve the infection and away from the metabolic system, away from the brain, away from other body functions which allow us to feel healthy and to thrive. And essentially, this prioritization of energy towards the immune system leads to lethargy, muscle aches, and obviously fatigue in general. Candida can disrupt the gut microbiome. So it thrives in the gut, and its overgrowth can disrupt the different balance of bacteria in the gut, which play a role in our health. I think I've mentioned on previous podcasts, one of the most popular tests we do with our clients is a stool test, which can tell us about imbalances in the gut microbiome. And when we work on addressing gut health, it can really create a positive shift in overall well-being. Candida can damage the lining of the intestines, often referred to as leaky gut, where the membrane of the digestive system becomes permeable. And this can allow harmful particles, for example, toxins or undigested food or other pathogens, to enter into the bloodstream. And this can cause a really, really large immune response. It's essentially a form of endotoxemia, and that can be an underlying root cause of fatigue. It can also interfere with nutrient absorption. So compromised gut lining or an imbalance in gut flora driven by the candida overgrowth can lead to deficiencies in essential vitamins and minerals, particularly B vitamins and magnesium, which are really important in terms of energy production. And then low levels of these nutrients can cause fatigue. And I've mentioned again previously on other episodes, another test we do commonly with clients is organic acids, which can give us an indicator of functional levels of B vitamins. And a lot of our clients who have low levels of these B vitamins, when they're topped up, they do start to notice a change in their health and well-being. Candida can also spread beyond the gut. This is when it becomes systemic and it's essentially a form of endotoxemia. And this can be contributing to chronic and ongoing infections because of the way that it weakens the immune system. It puts additional stress on the body and then the resources of the immune system. And therefore, the body has to work harder and harder to fight infections. And this might be someone who is susceptible to, they're getting a cold, they're getting a flu every 6 weeks. I work with a lot of people like that. Or some people just don't get sick at all because their immune system is so compromised. And I work with people like that too. It can also contribute to brain fog and cognitive dysfunction, and this can lead to people feeling more tired. They have to use extra energy to focus and process information and just be normal human beings going through their everyday life. But additionally, it can also be neurotoxic. And so some of the neurotoxins, which are byproducts of candida, can also contribute directly to symptoms and also be a source of neuroinflammation, so inflammation of the brain. And then finally, it's stressful. And if the body has an ongoing immune response to candida, paired with the inflammation that the candida is creating, then it is a constant stress of the body trying to deal with the infection. And so this is a case where when we're looking to achieve safety in the body, it's really hard to achieve safety in the body when your immune system is working so hard and is so stressed out by the infection, which is held within the body. We need to sometimes create more safety in the body by dealing with these infections and reducing inflammation. So in summary, Candida contributes to chronic fatigue through its effects on the immune system, the gut, inflammation, and toxin production, all of which is inherently stressful. And the resulting chronic inflammation, nutrient imbalances, blood sugar fluctuations, and hormonal disruption all are persistent things that can create ongoing fatigue. So addressing candida overgrowth could be worthwhile in someone who has this as an issue for them because it just has this system-wide impact. So now that you understand a little bit about how candida could be impacting you, you might be asking, well, how do you know if it's a problem for you? And you may already know because you resonate with some of the symptoms, for example, like yeast infections, oral thrush, skin infections, digestive issues. You may already feel a little bit yeasty, so to speak, but sometimes it's not always obvious. And in which case we can test for candida in several different ways, through stool, through urine, through blood testing or swab testing, typically swabs for the vagina and for the oral microbiome. But we can use stool testing to test for candida cultures in the gut. The test that I usually use with clients is the GI Effects by Genova Diagnostic, which is a comprehensive stool panel. So you're not only going to be testing candida, you're going to be testing all sorts of other components of your digestive health, which we want to know about as well, because we don't just want to know, do you have candida, yes or no? We also want to know what other imbalances could potentially be contributing to this overgrowth. So a comprehensive stool panel would give a lot more information than just knowing if you have candida, yes or no. The other thing that comes up, we can also do urine testing. So with clients who we suspect have mold, we often do a lot of urine testing, specifically the Mosaic Laboratories organic acids test. And there are several markers on this test, which would tell us about a buildup of candida in the body. Specifically for candida, it is arabinose, carboxycitric acid, citromalic acid, and 3-oxoglutaric acid. So if any of these were elevated in an organic acids urine test, that could be a sign that there's candida overgrowth, even if you haven't done a stool test, for example. And then we can use blood. So blood can assess candida antibodies, for example, IgG, IgA, and IgM. Often abbreviated as GAM, the GAM antibodies. So when these antibodies are present, that can be suggestive that the candida has gone systemic and it's more of an endotoxemia situation. If IgG is elevated, it can indicate an ongoing or past infection. If IgA is elevated, it can indicate more of a superficial infection. And then if IgM is elevated, it can also indicate an ongoing infection. So we really wouldn't want to see IgM or IgG antibodies to Candida in the blood. Obviously, if we find that, we know what we're working with. It's endotoxemia situation. We really need to work on healing and repairing the gut wall and getting rid of the Candida. But, you know, that's a more extreme situation, because when it does go systemic, it can create a lot more problems and potentially a lot more fatigue for the individual. And then I mentioned already that we can do swabs for things like the oral microbiome and the vaginal microbiome, which would potentially just, you could just test for yeast or candida, but you could test for other aspects of that microbiome as well. We could also potentially look at urine mycotoxins. So just like mold, candida can produce mycotoxins. And therefore, the strategy we use when we work with candida and mold is often very similar. As I said already, I recorded a whole series on mold and mold mycotoxins. So whether you have one or the other, but this episode and the mold series, I think there's about three different episodes or four different episodes on mold that you can listen to. They will all potentially be good to listen to in conjunction with this episode. So it's not uncommon for people to have both together, and we do a lot of the same things. But if I'm talking about Candida specifically, things that we would want to consider as like the big picture would be an anti-candida diet. And I would often say a ketogenic diet would be very complementary for anti-candida. Immune support and gut support, which I'll talk more about today. Supporting detoxification and drainage, which I've talked about in the mold episode, so I won't go into that much detail on that in this episode. Using binders and then addressing the colonization in the body with antimicrobial herbs. So let's start off talking about the anti-candida diet. The anti-candida diet is, as the name suggests, a dietary approach aimed at reducing the overgrowth of candida. And the primary focus of the anti-candida diet is to starve the candida yeast by limiting foods that fuel its growth, particularly sugars and refined carbohydrates, as yeast thrives on sugar. And we may also want to avoid yeast specifically in the diet as well. And really, I feel like the anti-candida diet to a degree is actually just a healthy diet, because you're excluding refined sugars and refined carbohydrates. You're eating good amounts of protein, fiber, and fat, which is something I talk about all the time in the podcast and with clients and on my blog. So for the most part, I think we should all to a degree be following an anti-candida diet, potentially even a ketogenic diet. For some people can be particularly helpful. But here's just kind of the highlights of things to do or not do. So you want to avoid sugars and refined carbs. And that really just means things like bread, pasta, sugary snacks, and sodas. Any high sugar fruits, so things like tropical fruits, banana, mango, pineapple, grapes, and dried fruits, anything that's particularly sugary. And then obviously no processed or refined sugars. So sometimes people will think, well, honey is healthy, or maple syrup is healthy, or sugar's okay as long as it's coconut sugar. But at the end of the day, it's all sugar, and all of these very, very sweet things should be avoided on the anti-candida diet. Then we want to eliminate high starch foods. So even once you've taken out your refined and processed carbohydrates and grains, we might still want to be taking out things like potatoes, corn, carrots, and anything which would really contribute to higher levels of sugar in the bloodstream. This is one of the reasons why I'm a big fan of doing blood sugar monitoring with clients, is because it really can help them to connect the dots between what they're eating and the impact it's having on their blood sugar, and can really help with the refining process of understanding what their body can and can't handle. In terms of fruits, in a really strict anti-candida diet, you may have to eliminate all fruits completely, but some people may be able to have some berries. So for example, blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, maybe some lemon, lime, and maybe green apples in moderation. And then we need to eat something. So you want to make sure that you're having good amounts of protein. So chicken, turkey, fish, beef, lamb, pork, and lots of non-starchy vegetables. So green vegetables, things like leafy greens, cucumbers, zucchini, bell peppers, and then healthy fats. So olive oil, coconut oil, avocado, nuts and seeds, oily fish, even, you know, some butter, things like that could all be helpful. And then there are certain herbs which have antifungal properties. And when you get to the antimicrobial stage of your anti-candida journey, you would supplement with these. But we can start to include them in the diet now to give just a low level of protective support. So things like garlic, for example, or oregano or rosemary or coconut oil can all have low level antifungal and antimicrobial properties. It probably goes without saying, but we want to avoid processed foods and just make sure that we're hydrating really well, because that's going to support the excretion of toxins and mycotoxins through the kidneys. So for the most part, the anti-candida diet is just meat, vegetables, good fats, and maybe a little bit of fruit, which is essentially a ketogenic diet. I have done other episodes on the ketogenic diet, so you could listen to those if you wanted a little bit more of a detailed approach. And there is more information on my blog as well. So eating really well is a really great place to start, just generally when we're working on health, fatigue recovery, digestive issues, mold, or candida specifically in this case. But the other thing we really want to consider is how we support the immune system. Because in challenging cases of candida, the infection enters the bloodstream and interacts with toll-like receptors, which can initiate a significant inflammatory response. And over time, this weakens the immune system and can be a cause of immune compromise, leading to increased susceptibility to ongoing infections or new infections coming in, or not being able to clear the infections that are there, or in some cases, even viral reactivation. So in this case, the immune system may need additional support while also addressing the candida itself. And where I really like to start with this is with the gut, because 70% of our immune system is located in and around the gut, and therefore rebalancing the digestive system will include addressing intestinal permeability. Which includes addressing intestinal permeability can be a good place to start. It's kind of beyond the scope of this episode to go through all the things we would do for the gut, because that is a whole episode in itself. But we should work through the gut in a systemic, in a systematic way, working north to south. And this is something that I cover in a lot more detail in my gut health mini course. But a very brief summary of the things we would be looking to do would include supporting the nervous system always to encourage good vagal tone, making sure you chew your food properly. So make a meal, put a forkful of food in your mouth and count how many times you chew. And the real goal is to chew 30 to 40 times per mouthful. Obviously, it depends what you've eaten. You know, if you have yogurt, you're not going to need to chew that much. But if you have solid food and a decent sized mouthful, 30 to 40 chews is the recommended amount. We want to make sure we have good stomach acid production. And this is going to help with protein digestion, but it also influences the pH of the gut. And when the gut has a higher pH, when it's more alkaline and less acidic, that can create opportunity for organisms like candida and other types of bacteria to thrive. So we need to have good stomach acid production to keep some of these overgrowths in check, and also to digest protein and nutrients associated with protein digestion. We also need to produce adequate amounts of pancreatic enzymes. So pancreatic enzymes are released in the small intestine, and after the acidic food comes down from the stomach, they facilitate further breakdown and digestion of food, which is going to be really important for nutrient liberation, but also to make sure that we don't have undigested food particles sitting around in the gut, which can potentially cause inflammation or move into the bloodstream and set off the immune system. And one of the reasons why people don't produce enough pancreatic enzymes is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So there can be bacterial overgrowth or sometimes even yeast overgrowth, fungal overgrowth in the small intestine. And that's going to inhibit the enzyme production. Could also be high stress or sometimes even blood sugar issues. So if somebody is diabetic and their pancreas isn't working very well, they're going to not produce good amounts of pancreatic enzymes. And also just intestinal permeability. If the gut lumen is damaged, if the cells of the gut membrane are damaged, that's also going to impact pancreatic enzyme production. We also need to make sure we have a healthy gallbladder because that can influence the balance of bacteria in the gut as well as fat digestion and absorption. And we need a healthy microbiome, which means we want to have a good balance of commensal bacteria in the gut because a common cause of candida overgrowth is frequent use of antibiotics where commensal bacteria are perhaps wiped out when somebody takes an antibiotic for an infection. If there's not a conscious effort to restore the balance of the microbiome, this creates an environment where other organisms like candida can overgrow and thrive. So all of the above is going to be really important as we address the health of the gut as a whole, as we support the immune system. And we also want to make sure we are supporting any intestinal permeability. Because if the intestines are permeable, if they're leaky, that creates the opportunity for the candida to go systemic. And then we have an endotoxemia situation, which is potentially a lot more severe in terms of the consequences it can have on health and energy. And so the nutrients that we would normally use in practice for intestinal permeability would be things like L-glutamine, butyrate, which is a short-chain fatty acid, vitamin D, vitamin A, and bone broths or collagen are also great food sources as well. So that is some specific support for the gut with the idea of supporting a compromised immune system in mind. But there are also other basic principles which we apply in fatigue recovery, whether someone has a compromised immune system or not, that will also be supportive for someone with candida and will also be supportive for someone with immune compromise. And these are just basic things that, you know, everybody should be doing, whether they have chronic fatigue or not, which is making sure you get enough sleep, making sure your blood sugar is balanced, making sure you have enough macronutrients. So protein is really important for the immune system. Fat is really important for the immune system and healthy cell membranes. We need to make sure that we're addressing micronutrient deficiencies, especially for the immune system, things like vitamin A, vitamin E, vitamin D, vitamin K, iron, copper, zinc, B vitamins, and vitamin C. We need to have a certain amount of movement for the immune system. Movement helps with immune regulation. Obviously, we have to move within capacity, and then we need to support our nervous system. So a lot of these things, maybe to me, but maybe not to you, sound kind of basic and they seem quite obvious, but you would be surprised at how many people I work with who've gone straight into taking like aggressive antimicrobials, antifungals, doing detox protocols, but they haven't built those foundations of just supporting their system, you know, repleting nutrients, balancing blood sugar, sleep, good routines, light exposure, all of the things I talk about on the podcast all the time need to be there to build the capacity and the resilience of the nervous system, of the immune system, before we can go in and do anything more aggressive. And in some cases, we might also need to look at things like adrenal function, sex hormones. You know, if there's somebody is smoking or taking drugs and alcohol, most of my clients, pretty much all my clients, don't do any of those things, but it does happen. You know, all of these things need to be considered as well. So once we have all of those beautiful foundations in place, and obviously you can listen to other episodes of this podcast where I go into like each one of those things, there's a whole episode on each one. You can listen more on those if you need more support around that. Then we can maybe think about some antimicrobial herbs. As I said already, is the mistake that a lot of people make is they jump in here before they've done all the other things that I've just talked you through. So just remember, we want to stabilize the body first. We want to build up resilience and capacity. We want to get the digestive system working well. We want to address nutrient deficiencies. We want to support detox and drainage. More on that in the mold episodes. And then we're ready for the next step. And at this step, what I like to do usually is I like to add in binders before I add in antimicrobials. And I talk more about binders and antimicrobials in the mold episode. But binders are the garbage men of the body. They help to take out the trash. So when we're detoxing, the liver transforms the toxins. That's detoxification. And then the toxins get packaged up in the bile. They get sent to the gallbladder. The gallbladder releases toxins into the gut with the bile. And then we should carry those toxins in the stool out of the body. And then that's the drainage. And so sometimes what happens is the toxins stick to the bile. And when the bile gets recycled, the toxins just go back into the body through that recycling process. But binders do what they say on the tin. They bind. So they bind toxins and they help to carry them out of the body. And I like to add binders before antimicrobials because it's possible that once somebody starts using herbs, they're going to temporarily increase their toxic load because as you kill off the candida, more toxins may be produced and that could overload the body potentially if it's done too aggressively and we're not draining properly and our detoxification pathways aren't working well and we haven't built the initial resilience that we need. Some people can be really sensitive to binders. So I'm learning more and more. The longer I work in this niche, it's just how things go. You start to work with people who are more and more sick and more sensitive. So when I first started working with chronic fatigue people, I worked with a lot of people who could handle a capsule of activated charcoal and it wasn't an issue. Now I'm working with people who need to break the capsule open, take a quarter of a capsule, put it in a little bit of water, and then only do that once every 3 days. You know, listening to this podcast, it's really hard to know exactly what you'll need to do. But now the way that I'm working with clients, I would say I always just go really, really cautiously just in case any reactions do happen. And I do have an episode on how to supplement if you're supplement sensitive, which you can listen to as well. So I usually do recommend activated charcoal just because it generally does seem to be well tolerated. It's inexpensive. Having sensitive clients these days, I do prefer to just recommend single ingredients. There are a lot of great binders out there, but some of them have like multiple ingredients in one product, which can be a little bit tricky for people who are sensitive. There are other options though. So things like bentonite clay, chlorella, N-acetylcysteine, Saccharomyces boulardii, and even probiotics like L-rhamnosus can actually have binding properties. Propamanin, zeolite, humic and fulvic acid are all binders. So we want to introduce the binder of choice and then get into a good routine with the binder, knowing the dosage, how much we can tolerate, making sure there's no big reactions. And then we're ready for antimicrobial herbs. And so before starting antimicrobial support, we want to make sure we have included support for the microbiome and support for the intestinal barrier. I know that I've covered this already, but it's really important to reiterate it because one of the reasons why people often experience candida overgrowth is because they've taken antibiotics and the microbiome hasn't been restored afterwards. So if we're going to go in with our natural antibiotics in the form of antimicrobial herbs, we need to do the same. We need to make sure that we're supporting the microbiome around these herbs. So we can do that by taking things like probiotics, by having short-chain fatty acids like butyrate, taking the glutamine, the vitamin A, the vitamin D, all of those things can be supportive for the microbiome. And then we can add in things like uva ursi, caprylic acid, powder arco, cat's claw, or oregano. Obviously, these things are Some of these things can be quite strong. And as I've said already, is the more I work with sensitive individuals, my preference is to use alcohol-free tinctures with a single ingredient, because then you can just take the supplement literally one drop at a time, and the dosage can be built up really slowly using this sort of low and slow strategy. However, in cases where individuals are a little bit more robust, I will use maybe higher doses of products, and I might also include things which are antiparasitic and antibacterial. So we're kind of covering all bases at once. And this might be things like wormwood, black walnut, garlic, olive leaf, berberry, golden seal, grapefruit seed extract, all of those types of things. And if somebody has the capacity for it, I do like to use a combination product with like a few different things in one. But I might start them initially with a single ingredient tincture, see how they respond to that, how easy was it for them to build up the dosage, and then maybe play around with some other things if they can tolerate it. And so I guess the question you might be asking yourself as you're listening to this, how long do you do this for? And it is a little bit of a how long is a piece of string answer, because some people just have to do it for 4 weeks and they feel so much better and that's all they need. And then other people are on antimicrobial herbs for months, probably those doing the low and slow approach. So it does depend on the case. And this is when it can be helpful to have a practitioner who can monitor your situation and help you make these decisions. After a period of time, it can also be helpful to add in things like biofilm disruptors. So for example, N-acetylcysteine, monolaurin, colloidal silver, natokinase, trypsin, serratio peptidase can all disrupt biofilm. And biofilm is a matrix that sticks to the tissues in the body. And it's made up of proteins, fats, polysaccharides, and DNA. And it kind of acts like a shield or a protective coating that is a barrier between the microbe, in this case, Candida, and the immune system. So when you perhaps take some of these antimicrobial agents, it doesn't necessarily get to all of the Candida because it's hiding in the biofilm. But then after you've, you know, done a series of time taking antimicrobials, you could add the biofilm disruptor in to disrupt the biofilm. It releases some of these, more of these microbes, in this case, Candida, which is hiding underneath the biofilm, and then you can get to more of the infection. But it's really important to acknowledge here that this can cause flares in sensitive people. If you do disrupt too much of the biofilm too quickly, then there's more there for the immune system to react to. And that can be potentially problematic for some people as well. We can also give some vaginal support. So if there has been, a lot of yeast infection issues, I really like to use a probiotic, which is targeted towards the vaginal microbiome. And you can also use vaginal suppositories. So there's a couple. There's a yeast arrest, which is a homeopathic remedy. And then BioCare does one, which is called Intra Fresh, which has some probiotics and some garlic in it, which can be supportive as well. So those are just a few ideas. And then if you're looking to support the oral microbiome, things to consider would be oil pulling. Sometimes I recommend oil pulling, which is when you just take a tablespoon of coconut oil and you swirl it around your mouth for like 10 or 15 minutes and then you spit it out, remembering that the coconut oil does have some caprylic acid, so it's going to have a weak antimicrobial effect. But sometimes I recommend to clients that they just put a little bit of activated charcoal in the oil, or even just like a drop of a tincture in the oil and swirl it around the mouth, spit it out. Tongue scraping can also be helpful, and probiotic toothpastes as well could all be supportive for the mouth. So hopefully you have a much more clear idea now on how you can support Candida if that is an issue for you. Just to recap on what we've talked about today, we've talked about what Candida is, how it can impact fatigue, how you can test for it, and then the approach for managing it in the body, which starts with building those solid foundations. So remember, supporting the immune system, supporting the gut, anti-candida diets and really addressing all the things that you need to address so that you are more resilient and stable. That will be different depending on the case, but for a lot of people, it's going to be things like blood sugar, nervous system, and sleep would probably be my top three. We want to make sure we're detoxing and draining well. And then when all of those foundations are in place, you can add in the binders, you can add in the antimicrobial herbs, and hopefully start to feel better. And if you get lost or stuck, then there's always the opportunity to reach out to a practitioner for more support. You're welcome to take a look on my website, look into availability of working with myself. If you feel like you need some more help on your fatigue recovery journey, whether that is with candida or something else that you've learned about on this podcast that you feel you could use more support around. So that does bring me to the end of this episode today. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you in the next episode.